Welcome to the Music for Youth presents the Right Track Podcast. We hope that everyone is starting to feel festive. Our proms at the Royal Albert Hall were very special indeed. So a huge thank you to those of you involved. Today we have artist, producer, manager and A&R, Emmy Giles. Please donate on our website, www.mfy.org.uk. And please give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do so at mfy@mfy.org.uk. Okay, I'd like to welcome to the Right Track Podcast today, Emmy Giles. Thank you for coming on.
No worries, pleasure.
So, I've done quite a lot of research on you. What I always like to start with, and what I started with my chat with Adam from the music, who you signed, you were saying, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
What are your first memories of music, like in the household? And were you in a particularly musical house? And when did you first sort of fall in love with music?
It wasn't a particularly musical house. My dad was a massive Beatles and kind of Queen fan. And I was kind of I was very much thrown into the 60s by my dad. And my mum was more 80s. So she was into like Tina Turner and Dire Straits and that kind of world. You know, music was always something that was on, but it wasn't a musical household as such. It was very much something you would listen to just enjoy. And when I was a kid, I wanted to actually learn how to play clarinet, but I couldn't afford a clarinet. So I ended up having a cello because it was peripatetic and I could get a free cello. So I did play as a child, but it wasn't an instrument I really wanted to play. I always wanted to play clarinet. I did that up until I was 16 and then I gave it up. But really the thing that I really loved about music was radio and how music was delivered to an audience. And I loved that. I loved just listening to radio and hearing about the best new music. And I used to listen to like Steve Lamacq every evening whilst doing my homework. You know, for me, that was kind of my way in, because I was from a small town called Doncaster, and there wasn't, you know, I didn't know what A&R was. I didn't know what management was. I didn't know if that was a journey that I could look at. I didn't have a clue. It was just by listening to radio that it was kind of like, okay, this is something I want to look at. And when I got to university, I was doing 3 science at A-level, and I got to university to do pharmacology, and it was something that I didn't really want to do. I just did it because I was bright. And then music kind of just took the route, really. I was watching lots of gigs, listening to lots of music, and it just kind of it told me rather than I told it. It just happened. I don't think it really was anything I cooked up in any way, shape or form. In fact, I'd probably say it was far from what I cooked up. I didn't expect to go into music, but it just happened.
That sort of relates well to you mentioning the sort of, I listened to your chat with Danny Champion.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that your initial sort of passion was to sort of potentially be a DJ, like a radio DJ.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of refers to what you've just said about Steve Lamacq. And you mentioned that you liked John Peel as well. Is one of the sort of greatest things about the role you're doing now as sort of artist, producer, manager, that sort of what you would have done as a DJ as well, that giving a platform to new musical talent, was that sort of the aim?
Yeah, I think it was always something I love allowing people to have a voice. And for me, that was really, really a big thing for me. It just, you know, music at the end of the day, there's many things that music does, but also the other thing that music does is allow someone to tell their story. And that's a really powerful thing. And music can make you feel anything, you know, it can make you feel angry, it can make you feel sad, it can make you feel happy. Music can change you from feeling alone to feeling held and feeling safe and feeling like I am part of something. you know, it's such an incredible thing. And I think, yeah, for me, it was always about, yeah, getting music out into the world. I just really, really believe in that. And I love working alongside someone to, yeah, allow them to get to where they want to get to. That's really a massive drive for me.
One thing I find, and sort of when we were coming up with this podcast, your name stood out as someone I'd love to speak to, because one thing I find quite inspiring about your social media, and we know a few mutual people. Oh yeah, no, honestly, there's a.
I'm very opinionated on Twitter.
Yeah, which is good, and I think one of the things I've found inspiring in other people, I'm sure, who follow you, Will, is that you're very there's a real sort of straight talking, in a good way, honesty about the music industry, and sort of, you know, in terms of artistic, they're like, you know, protecting your rights and getting the right deals and, you know, being cognizant of your approach to your music career. In terms of sort of music career, when you went into A&R and you were at Fiction Records, is that right?
Yeah, I was at Fiction, yeah.
With the industry how it was at that point, What challenges did you come into contact with day to day? What were the challenges during that period?
So many challenges. I was the only female A&R in the whole of the major label network. You know, I came from a single parent family. I didn't have skill set to deal with being in a minority in a company that was very masculine and very dog eat dog. I didn't have the skill set for it. I just wasn't prepared for how it was all about winning. And it wasn't about the artist for me. And I didn't get that. And I found that very frustrating. And I lost my soul for a long time working there because of it. I was told at one point by someone that I would never be the head of a label because I was a woman.
Jeez.
You just start questioning yourself. You don't believe in what you think anymore. And towards the end of my time doing A&R, I hated everything about it. I hated music. And I think it was now it's a lot better, you know, there's a lot more females working within the industry. It's a lot more diverse. It's not white men, privately educated, who are emotionally stunted. And, you know, there's a lot more broadness in avenue. And if I've been given the tools and allowed to really, you know, thrive, I think I would have done very well there. But equally, my morals didn't really sit well with working for a label either. Because every time I was working with managers, I'd be like, I want to be them. I want to be the one that's fighting the good fight. I want to be the one that's making the decision with the artist to make sure that they were doing the right thing for the long term. I'm a very strategic and very long-term thinker. I don't believe in short-term thought. I believe in, why are you doing it and what are you going to gain from it and what is going to give you in the long term? That's vital, and it's like so vital.
Purpose, certainly.
Purpose, yeah. Like, you know, it could be anything. It could be that you want to be playing a massive live show. It could be that you want to be streaming lots. It could be that you just want to make great records every year. Or you might want to say something in a way that you want to say it. And everything you do has to be about, you're there to question the artist. Yes, 100%. Like, why are you doing this? What are you doing this for? But equally, allowing them to be the best they possibly can be.
One thing I was thinking about there, just listening, with what we do at the music charity, and in general in the music industry, when I used to work more in the industry, I think it's very important, which I'm almost sure you are to your artists and producers, is to have a mentor at whatever age, really, and to have that mentorship. And I was just wondering, as you were sort of giving your answer there, was there anyone in the music industry who gave you good advice and mentorship during your career?
No, and that was my big problem. There was no one to help me. There was no one to help me. When I was negotiating my deals, I didn't have a lawyer, and I got screwed so many times financially. because of that. And I was persuaded by my boss so many times that this was how it was. And he didn't realize, but he was clipping my voice every time he did that. And he still works in the industry now. And I have zero respect for someone like that. I just think you have to let someone, you cannot clip someone's wings. You have to let them soar. You have to let them soar. And I think, you know, that was, no, I never had anyone. And I think now I mentor people, and I really, really believe in that and the power of that. And I believe in the power of having people you can bounce from and you can have a chat with. You know, I have great managers around me that I trust implicitly, that if I need to go and speak to them and think about the way that they would cook up a deal, I would be like, how would you do this? What would you do about that? Like, how would you go about this? My knowledge is not infinite. I have a great deal of knowledge, but I wouldn't say it's infinite. And I would say that I'm always learning, and I can learn from all the people around me. And I think mentor schemes are vital and important, and they need to happen more, certainly for people who are coming from backgrounds like me. I can't ring my mum up. I still can't ring my mum up and say, Mum, I'm negotiating this deal. How would you deal with it?
Yeah.
Like, she does not have any idea. She still, like, my mum still has no idea of, like, how my job works or how any of my job has worked. She's a single parent. She was a cleaner. She's not, you know, she's not educated. And I'll speak to friends of mine, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll speak to my mum or I'll speak to my dad, and, you know, I'm buying a flat, or and they'll be able to speak to their parents. And I'm like, I don't have that. I've never had that. Every single thing I've done has been by me and my ability to navigate and find ways forward. I've not had a counsel at any point. And that's one thing I really wish for everyone else in the position that I was in, that they'd had a counsel, and they have a counsel, and they have someone to turn to, because it's a bloody lonely situation when you don't have that, and especially at the age of 25.
That literally brings a great link into my next question, which I actually, when I was doing my research and my prep for this, this was the last question I thought of, but it's probably from the research I've done for you and what you've just been talking about, the most sort of one of the most important that I'll ask you sort of today is, how important is following your instincts, both as an artist, producer, manager, and as a creative?
Oh, it's 100%. You have to. The way it's the only way you go about anything. You have to be instinctual. I trust my gut on everything. I lost my gut for a long time when I was at Universal. I lost it, and I trust my gut on everything. And then now, I trust my gut, and then I work out why from the gut. Well, my gut's saying that. Why is it saying that? And then I'll reflect upon that. And I think that's the best way of going about anything. And as an artist, you have to know what you want to do and have to be very clear about what you want to do and what you want to achieve. Vital. It's vital. If you do not have a clear idea of who you are or what you are, you will never be successful. It just won't happen. It might happen by chance, but the chances are it might happen by chance. And sometimes that happens by chance. But I would say majority, they know what they want to create and how they want to create it. The best artists always do. They're just going, what do I want to say? And how do I want the world to see it and feel it and be part of it?
With the artists you've sort of had a part of signing, or you've seen that have really sort of, you've really felt. So with like Ellie Goulding or White Lies or The Delays or the music, what makes, with those artists, what sort of, what did they display to you when you saw them perform, or their recordings or the compositions, that really made you think, this is worth signing and me investing my time into? What made them stand out?
I mean, all of them have got incredible voices. That's, for me, I love an anchor voice. I think it's such an amazing thing. And then ultimately, all of them were just really great songwriters. Like, you know, the music, Adam was an insane guitarist. Like, he's still an insane guitarist. And a great writer of hooks. And, you know, Rob was a great melody top line writer and is writing massive songs now. The delays, Greg, who passed away last year of bowel cancer, actually, and very sadly, he's only 40 odd years old. It's bloody awful. And Greg was the lead singer. And when I met Greg, it was just, he was so, such an artist, knew exactly what he wanted to do and how he wanted to put out in the world. And he was an artist on so many levels. He was a visual creator as well as a musical creator. And it was him and Aaron. And Aaron, again, an incredible ideas man, like some of the best ideas, would always be coming up with great ideas all the time and loved a hook. And that the mix between the two of them, they were amazing. And Ellie had such a great lyric and a great voice and a great song, and she wasn't doing anything that anyone else was doing at the time. It sounded like her, and she could just make the room, you know, she would move you with her voice. And White Lies, you know, lyrically and musically, they were talking to a disaffected people. It was, you know, to lose my life or lose my love. Like, I mean, what a lyric. It's, you know, they were writing in a way that wasn't normal. It was structurally absurd at times. Death was not an obvious song. They put power chords at the end of their song, but yet it still had so much hook in it. And so all of them had their own world. Like, they were never anything that was anything similar to anyone else. They always wanted to be who they were. And I, even with Erland, who I manage now, same situation. He just wants to be who he is and has a very clear vision of what he wants to create and is just creating it. And I admire that. And Bill Ryder Jones, who I managed for 8 years, same, just an insane ability to just be like, I know that I want to make this and this is my voice and it's vital. And that to me is, and Preskate the same. When I first heard them, I was like, they don't sound like anyone else. There's so many bands that sound like other people or artists that sound like other people. And that just bores me. I don't want to hear something that sounds like someone else. I want them to be them and clearly them and find their world. Yeah, so I guess for me, that was always, I've always looked for that. That's what I've always looked for in everything that I've ever managed. Everything or ever worked with is just something that doesn't feel like anyone else.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw the music at, I think it was Leeds Festival. Yeah, Rob's voice is like, it's like a hurricane, isn't it? It's just like incredible. Yeah. Like,
and you sort of feel the rhythm section and the like the rhythms of the music. It just, you know, I remember the first time I heard Strength in Numbers, and I remember Adam sent it me, and he sent it on email, and I remember being in the office, and I put it on. And I literally rang him and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is the song, this is the single. Like, I remember Adam saying to me afterwards, he's like, you know, that really propelled me and Rob to get this record done. I remember that so clearly to this day. I still remember that song just, and and I think that's the thing. It's like, it's normally a song or it's normally something that just goes like, you're not doing anything like anyone else. You're a voice. And all artists should have their own itinerary. They shouldn't have any other ones, anyone else's itinerary. It just need to be, and it doesn't sound like anyone else. It's them. And I admire that. No one is going to be another Erland Cooper, because there's never going to be another Erland Cooper. No one is ever going to be the music, because there's never going to be another music. I love that. I just love it.
Oh, it's good to hear that. Good to hear that passion coming through. When you started Step Management, was that, from what you've said throughout our conversation so far, was a big plus, I imagine it is, of starting your own venture with Step Management, start to have 360 control and, you know, be calling the shots yourself rather than having to sort of answer to a load of people? Is that is the 360 control and vision of it a big appeal of starting your own producer and artist management company?
I mean, when I left Universal, I started Jigsaw with my old business partner, Carrie, who's incredible. And we were managing mostly producers and writers. And that was kind of our thing, producers, mixers and writers. And then we realized that I wanted to still do both artist and writer and producer management. I didn't want to do one. And she wanted to just do the producer stuff. So it was kind of a natural thing. We did that for 5 years and we had a lot of success together and it was wonderful. And I admire Carrie a great deal. She's one of the best out there. And then I went to work for various artists and, you know, I worked there for about a year and a half. And we just didn't have a different, we had a different way of doing business. And, you know, I'm not a seller, I'm a builder of trust, and that's the way that I work, and that's who I am, and I never have been anything other than that, and I'll carry on being that. Then I set up a step, and yeah, I guess, you know, the reason why I always, every single point has always been, yeah, about me making sure I still have a voice and that the artist has a voice. I want to work in a way that allows people to be the best. That to me is vital. It's vital. And that does right by people and doesn't manipulate people in a way that's unhealthy or about them. And I guess that's why I set up what I set up and why me and Carrie went into business, because we both have similar morals, you know? And so, yeah, everything I do is always about like what's right for my client. Whether that's, you know, Adam Noble, who's an incredible producer, I think one of the best out there, like by far, who makes incredible records, you know, whether it's fighting for his rights or it's fighting for Erland's rights, whatever, it's, everything's got to be about fairness. And there'll be people out there who won't be fair. And you have to be able to fight that fairness and make sure that that is looked after.
Sort of brings me nicely on to, I've just got a couple more questions. This time has completely flown. So you're a Liverpool supporter, aren't you? You'll see where I go with this.
I'm a massive Liverpool fan, yeah.
I'm from the Northeast, but I my favourite manager by far is Klopp.
Yeah.
And I think what's special about Klopp is, you know, his man management is just like, I think it's beyond Guardiola's. I think it's beyond anyone's. And you can, you know, you can see it when you watch the game, you know, the way it's rare that you get, you can just see visually on the screen how much they love him. It's rare. Maybe Southgate has a sprinkling of that, but not on Klopp's level. And why I'm bringing up that sort of personal relationship is it sort of links on to, with your artists and producers on your current roster, I don't think it's talked about in general in the industry, how important it is not just to have their business interests, but to sort of invest in them and their vision and them as people. Do you think that quality is underlooked?
Oh God, 100%. It has to be both. Don't get me wrong, I'm shrewd as they come with business, but at the end of the day, it's about them and looking after them and nurturing them. And are they happy? Are they comfortable? Do they feel like they are getting themselves what they should deserve to be given? You know, that's my job at the end of the day. That is ultimately my job. Fight the good fight. So, yeah, you know, telling them they're great when they are great and they might not see that they're great, or, you know, whatever it is, it's like you've got to be their biggest fan. If you're not their biggest fan, there's no point in managing them. There just isn't. That's it. You have to want to take bullets for that person. You want to, like, you fight whatever you need to fight. I will sit on a call with whoever and I will make sure if it's the right thing, I will literally be belligerent about it. I'll be like, no, this is how it's got to be. No, because I know that it's got to be fair.
Yeah, I just it's good to hear you speak about sort of fairness for the artists and protecting their rights. That's what really has cut through in a positive way with me, and I'm sure a lot of people, about your approach in general. But so we've got a large audience of young musicians and creatives and producers and vocalists and performers who will be listening to this. In terms of, on an artist level, could you give them a couple of pieces of advice about what do you think's about best approaching their career path as an artist? Like, what should they be concentrating on at the moment?
Hard work. That is the fundamental. You are not going to be successful, and you are not going to get to where you want to be without hard work. That is fundamental. You can't be lazy in this industry. You just can't be, especially now, maybe 10, 15 years ago, maybe. But you have to be steering that ship yourself. You have to be driving that car yourself. That's really important. Talent, the ability to have ideas and make them a reality. I've got an idea. I want to make it happen. Make it fucking happen. No ifs, buts and maybes. No excuses. Just do it. Vital. Don't compromise on the art. Never compromise on the art unless it feels like you can compromise and it makes sense to compromise. If it feels like you want to, you know, add, someone says, oh, do a radio edit. That's not a compromise. That's understandable. You've got to do a radio edit for radio. But if overall what you're trying to say and what you're trying to do is there, don't move on that. Like, be clear on that. I think they're the most vital things. And find the best people around you. Surround yourself with people who will fight the good fight. Like, I'm chatting to a band at the moment about potentially managing them. I might, when this goes out, I might not have got them. But I really believe in them. And they were negotiating a deal, and they are negotiating a deal. And they had a perpetuity in that clause, a life of copyright. And I said, no, you need to take it out. You need to take it out. You need that taken out. It has to be out. It can't be in that deal. And they got it out. But no one else advised them on that. It was me. And so I think making sure you have someone who will fight to make sure things like that. I didn't have to do that. Like, that wasn't valuable for me in the long term. There was no value to me in the long term to do that. I might not be managing them ever, and I might not be managing them in 30 years. But make sure that your manager is doing that for you, or your person, whoever it is that you're working with, are taking decisions that's not just about them, but it's about what's good for them, for the artist, or what's good for the producer, what's good for the mixer, or whoever it is. And there are going to be times as well, the other thing to be really aware of, there are going to be times you're going to fall out with people. Like, you are going to fall out with your artist. You're going to be like, and there's going to be, you fall out with your manager. Always fix it. Always fix it. But talk. Because I would say 90% of the time, as long as you're on the same page 90% of the time, there's a 10% that you don't agree well with. That's completely fine. Like, I don't know a time when I've not had moments where we don't agree with things like that. You're always going to have moments like that. But I would say, as long as it's 90% of the time, you go, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Then great. And if you've got someone that you trust, that's more important than anything. Trust. And same both ways. An artist has to trust a manager, and a manager has to trust an artist.
Well, just to finish things off, because we've only got a couple of minutes left, but just to finish things off, we ask this at the end of every episode. What's the best piece of advice you've been given in your music career?
You know what? I don't think anyone's given me any advice that I go, oh my God, like, I wish I'd been given that. I don't feel like anyone's really given me like incredible advice where I've gone, oh my God, thank you. Maybe an ex-boyfriend said to me, just trust yourself. That's probably it. But when I wasn't trusting myself.
It's still pretty good transferable sort of advice. It's good.
Yeah, because I think now I trust myself implicitly, 100% trust myself. But in my 20s, I didn't, and there's a lot of kids that don't at that age. And you have to trust yourself, both on an artistic level or a management level or any other level. You have to trust yourself. You have to go, yes, I am definitely... If you've got the doubts, work out why you've got the doubts. They might just be loony doubts. They're probably not in any sense. There's no realism between them. try and find the find why you do that and trust yourself.
Well, Ellie, it's been, if our young sort of musical listeners can't find some gold in that, then I don't know. And thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are, and thanks for coming on.
No worries. My pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Take it easy. All right. Bye. Bye.